Hey, fellow NDE fans, we have some exciting things coming up on the other side, but we could really use your help and support to keep going with this channel. Our outreach team works around the clock, making sure to bring you the best NDE stories that we can find. But now we're looking to expand into other countries to get near-death experiences from around the globe. However, we need your help and support to make this happen. This is why we're introducing our YouTube membership program. Get access to exclusive ad-free episodes that haven't been on YouTube. Watch and participate in live Q&As with the guests. Engage directly with us and NDEers. Participate in giveaways and live events. And most importantly, you will ensure our channel's continuous efforts to seek out and uncover these important experiences worldwide. Support us by hitting the Join Now button below. Thank you for your continued viewership and support. Your help will make a difference, and we look forward to building our community together with you.
My story really starts from childhood. I was always a clairvoyant child to a point when it was scary. I knew things before they happened. I really just had the heart for animals and people. I couldn't see people suffering. Just was always knew I had something special and metaphysical about me. But it was so intense that I rebelled it. So as I was growing up and the ego took over, you know, I was always a good person, but I was very, very materialistic. I was very, very the opposite of what I was supposed to be, what I was meant to be. And if that's from just being, you know, out there and a dating scene and just really being into money and into materialistic things. And I didn't really think anything about the soul journey, but I was simply focusing on my life journey. And that's how I grew up. So I was rebelling it, though I knew that deep inside that realm existed. I just didn't want to do anything. I wanted nothing to do with it. So I was 20, no, I was 33 when the accident happened. But I came to America at age 26. And like I said, I chased the material. I had a few businesses. I was teaching martial arts for years. I was helping people. And again, don't get me wrong, I was a decent human being. I never broke the law. I was a very decent human being. But when it comes to materialism, when it comes to the opposite of spirituality, that's where my mind and heart were at the time. So I was really into making money and being successful and being out there and just getting noticed and all that stuff. I remember that at age 33, it was October 14th of 2014. I was working as a correctional officer for the state of Illinois. And I work in a maximum security prison in Illinois. And for those of you who don't know, maximum security prisons are where the worst of the worst are being housed. It's people that have a minimum sentence of 25 years and above. So it was, why am I saying this? Because just to describe you the energies, the spiritual energies that I was observing in that place behind those walls were just something out of this world. But at the time, I didn't pay any attention to it. I was trying to block it off because I wanted to make money. Only had this job because I wanted to make good money and I wanted to have good benefits. And in the area that I lived back then, there wasn't really too much to do. So that was a really good job to have. So we were working crazy hours. Like, we were so short-staffed. And when you work for a maximum security prison that houses over 3,000 inmates, like, you have to have the manpower to maintain that. So a lot of us were mandated to work overtime. And I'm talking about 14-hour shifts, and I was working the night shift. I remember that I used to commute to work 1 hour each time, so each way. And there was just a bunch of cornfields, and it was like middle of nowhere, so the road was really boring, you know, to do it at the same time, same thing every day. And I remember that during my working overtime, I couldn't sleep very well when I got back home, because I was just like always thinking about the prison and the scenes that I've seen there. And it's going from criminal all the way up to demonic. as far as what's going on in such prison. Not to go into details, of course. So it was really, really bad energies that prevented me to sleep. But so I was working at my business as a martial artist, going home, taking a shower, getting in my uniform, and going to work at the prison, 14-hour shifts. So these were my days. I remember that because I was new, fairly, and I didn't have seniority. I was only there for 2 years. My days off were never the weekends, but there were Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And on your days off, they could not mandate you to work overtime. So you kind of have to just get done with your shift and go home. And I remember it was a Tuesday morning, and I'm like, I'm just going to go home, and I'm going to relax, and I'm going to see my kids, and it's going to be fun. Nobody's going to mandate me, and I was really excited. Tuesday morning arrived, and I get into my van, and it was around 6:45 after I got done getting my stuff and leaving the prison. And I remember it was a sunny day. It was a nice day, and I didn't feel tired. Like most days, I would feel very, very, very tired. But I didn't feel tired during this one. For some reason, I was very, very, like, I had an adrenaline rush because I felt like I'm going to go and do something fun tonight. I don't know what, but it's going to be fun. And I got into my van, and I'm going into this route called Route 3, which is like an hour straight forward drive, cornfields on both sides, nothing. And you just drive back home. And I remember it was 7 a.m., and I'm driving on the Route 3 in my uniform. And I'm doing 70 miles per hour because that was the speed limit. And I wasn't speeding because I was, you know, I was a correctional officer. I was in uniform. You have to obey the law always. But especially when you're in uniform, you can't even speed a little bit. You got to be in the speed limit. So I was doing the speed limit. And I don't know what happened, but within a split second, I don't know if I dozed off, if I fell asleep, I don't know what happened, but it was a split second. And all of a sudden, I feel that my wheel just locked. I feel that my brakes locked. They were stuck. Nothing worked. Like, it wasn't any hydraulic fluid in them. So here I am in my van, and then it started hydroplaning and spinning. And I remember that I didn't panic, but I just didn't understand what just happened. And I'm looking at the speed gauge at the time and hoping that the speed's going to go down so I can try to control the car. And instead, it was going up. So it went from 70 to 75, to 80 to 85. And I didn't understand what was going on. And then across from me, in the opposite lane, because it was, you know, it was a school week and it was 7 a.m., so people that lived there took their kids to school at that time. And I could remember through the windshield, I saw the car approaching while I was spinning. And there was a lady there with two of her little kids in the back seat. And I remember telling myself, no matter what happens, no matter what you did, no matter if I fell asleep or not, it doesn't matter. You're not taking other lives with yours. So with everything I had, I was just steering my wheel to the right as hard as I could. And then I was facing this concrete wall, a divider of some sort. And I'm looking at the speed gauge, and it's 85 miles per hour. And I remember that as closer as I got to this concrete wall, time slowed down dramatically. And I remember holding the wheel, and just like people say that, you know, you see your whole life running in front of you, I just remember that I had the biggest smile on my face. Now, remember, I told you in the beginning, I was a martial artist. I was a martial arts instructor for decades. And I know my instinct. And I knew that if I'm about to hit something, I would cover up, I would brace, I would do something to try to save myself. And instead, in that moment, I'm going in there and I'm smiling. I'm smiling like I'm about to welcome a loved one at the airport that I haven't seen in years. It's like a moment of anticipation, an unexplained anticipation. And I remember that between me and myself, I'm debating, like, are you smiling because you didn't imagine you're going to just die like that, like on your way back from work in your uniform without saying goodbye to everybody? Or are you smiling? Why? And I just didn't know why, but I was smiling and I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid at all. And then I heard the impact sound, the blast. It was the loudest explosion sound I've ever heard in my entire life. And I've heard some explosions before. And nothing like that. Nothing like that. It was like the loudest thunder. And then all I could remember was the airbag starting to deploy, but it was so slow. And it looked to me like it was just sheets hanging outside to dry. It was a beautiful white sheets. It was just, you know, amazing effect. And then all I remember is opening my eyes upside down and note, I remember everything that happened from the second I left my shift, from the moment I left the prison to the time I lost control over the car and the lady across from me that I had to avoid, the impact. I remembered everything. So it's not like I was out and I didn't know what happened. I was upside down. I'm in my van, and there are a lot of pictures of it online, and the van was squashed like a soda can. And the body of the torn vehicle formed some sort of like fork-like swords that were just on me, and I'm underneath, and I wake up, and it's the absolute best feeling I've ever felt in my entire life. And I don't know about other people, but I don't think I'll do justice with trying to describe it and downgrade it into human terms, into this world's terms, because there's nothing that can even come close to compare to how you feel. But I will try. First, I remember that I was amazed with the fact that there was no sound. It was as if the sound was sucked out of this world completely. There was no sound at all. Of course, there's no pain, there's no smell, there's no sense of touch. There's absolutely nothing. And then I noticed that my thoughts are gone. You know, we always think, we constantly think, even at times that we are most relaxed. We can be somewhere vacationing in an isolated island and still enjoy ourselves and think about how much we're enjoying ourselves and think about how often we should do it. We always think. And in that moment, I didn't have any thoughts. I just existed. I didn't have any question marks. I knew everything. I felt protected. I felt blissful. I felt home. Now, I'm seeing everything. I'm still in the car. The car was completely squashed, and it almost like the driver's side, my side, got the most impact. Like, technically, I was supposed to be decapitated pretty much. And I'm there figuring out, like, what's going on? I mean, I'm still stuck, but I'm like, it's the best feeling in the world. Like, somebody's tickling you constantly. And there's nothing to worry about. And you just live. A true definition of living. Living unconditionally. Living with no problems. Living with nothing negative in your life. With no question marks, with no doubts. And I remember that I kind of figured out that I need to get out of the situation, even if I passed away and this is what it feels. And I remember that I'm upside down looking outside, and that was the same scenery, but it was very foggy. It was like a dream type scenery because I was the only one in the world. It was my own journey, seemed like. And I look outside. And I see a lady right outside the van. She was pacing back and forth. She looked like she was old. She was mid-60s, and she was dressed in black, and her clothes were like from the 1800s, something like that. She had a burn scar on her right cheek, headscarf, and she's just walking back and forth, back and forth. And I remember being upside down, and I'm just, I know I couldn't speak because there's no sound. There's absolutely nothing. It was just my vision, and I just existed. And I remember that I was just waving because I wanted to be able to get up. And she was pacing back and forth. And every time I asked for help, I was waiting for help, she just nodded no. She didn't speak. She just said, she just nodded no. And at the time, I remember old me would have probably got upset and frustrated and not understand why I'm not getting any help. And I remember that I didn't judge her. At that time, I was thinking, you know, maybe she's just too worried that she's going to do more harm than good. Maybe she's worried that the car is going to set on fire and something's going to happen. Maybe she's just scared. So I didn't judge her. And I told myself, well, I still want to enjoy this experience, this dream state. So I decided to close my eyes and get up and try again to get out and explore. And the second I closed my eyes, they opened right up and everything came back to life. Just like a movie that you would pause and then play right back. Everything, the sounds, the smells. I remember that there was a lot of gasoline smell in the car and the car was still turned on and I had to turn it off. And I felt the pressure on my knee because everything was, I was crushed completely. And I started panicking. I started like not understanding what's going on. And then I see, I think hundreds of people outside the car, all the way up to the road. It was like 3 fire trucks, 2 ambulances. It was crazy. And I didn't understand why, because I felt great. I didn't have any injury. I mean, I felt great. I remember the story. I remember the story prior to that. I remember the old lady. I remember everything. I just wanted to get out. So I remember this paramedic just ran into my van and just did like a football tackle right into the window and screamed at me from the top of his lungs, said, "Do not move. Do not move." And I remember saying back, "I'm okay. I'm okay. I promise I'm okay." And then it was like, "No, you're in bad shape. You think you're okay, but this is bad. It looks bad. We don't know what's going on. And just don't move." And then he gave me IV through the window. And I remember telling him, "Why are you giving me IV through the window? Just get me out of here, sir. You know, I'm okay." And he said, "We can't get you out. We're going to have to call the firefighters. They're on their way with the jaws of life." And if some of you don't know what the jaws of life are, it's some hydraulic machinery that's supposed to tear apart the vehicle, and then you can extract the passengers. And I remember that I was just trying to say that I'm okay. Nobody would listen. So I decided to just close my eyes and think about the experience and try to connect. I was almost meditating without knowing what meditating was. And that was so wonderful because here I am closing my eyes, kind of meditating, and I hear the firefighters using their hammers and saws, and they're cutting the car, and everybody's screaming. And I'm the most relaxed. Everybody's in chaos around me, and I have the most peace. And I remember that the second they got me out of the car, they cut my uniform immediately with scissors, and one of them gave me a morphine shot without even asking my permission for my stomach. So I felt everything's burning. And I'm like, "What are you doing?" And I kept trying to tell them that I'm okay, that I can even stand. I mean, I was fine. And nobody would listen. And they put me in the stretcher and they strapped me. And they're like, "You just, you don't know. You probably have many, many fractures and you've been bleeding and brain damage." And they said everything because of how the car looked. Because the fact that I hit the concrete wall and 80 miles per hour, that would kill 95% of people. And then I rolled over 5 times. So if that didn't do it, the 5 times rollover would do it. And the car just formed, I told you, these sheet metal forks. They were crossing right at the driver's side, my side. And I drove alone. And there's videos and pictures on my Facebook page about that. So I was supposed to be at least I don't even know what. And I remember they were rushing me, so I decided to just cooperate so they don't just think I'm crazy and I don't know, give me medication. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll go. I'll do it. I'll do what you want me to do. So they took me, and we are, and this is my first time ever in an ambulance like that. There was like intensive care one. And they just go crazy fast, and the sirens stuck in the movies. And I'm laying there, and I'm like, I don't even feel good. I was like, what's going on? And then I remember there was a sheriff lady, a deputy that was sitting there with us in the ambulance. And I was like, wanted to ask her a question. I said, may I ask you a question, please? And she said, well, it's better that you don't right now because you're in bad shape and you need to get tested. And after that, I'll take my report anyways. And I remember that I really insisted because something didn't add up to me at all. And I said, ma'am, I insist, can I please ask you a question? And she said, well, go ahead. And I remember saying, isn't it illegal for a citizen not to help and not a citizen in distress? And she was like, what are you talking about? And I go, well, you know, there's a lady there. I mean, I was stuck. And before you guys got here, I was trying to get out and I was waving. And she just like shake their head no and wouldn't help me. And I remember that the sheriff lady said, there wasn't no lady there. We were the first in the scene. First ones in the scene. You're in the middle of a field with nobody around you. And people from the prison called the police and neighbors and people were just gathering everywhere. And then I remember telling myself, okay, this is getting interesting. I better just not share it with anybody until I figure this out. And that was miracle number one. So I get to the hospital. And for those of you who don't know, like in a hospital, you can go to the ER or sometimes there's the trauma room. So the trauma room is for when there are severe, you know, the accidents or airlifting, like you need to save somebody's life immediately. So you go to the trauma room and then you are treated like quote unquote VIP because you don't go to imaging. They bring all the imaging to you. You just lay where you're at and everything comes to you, all testing. And I remember I felt like I just took a shower. I mean, I know ironically speaking, because it's supposed to kill me 99.999% of the people. And that's what I was told after talking to investigators and road investigators and people that are into that, because I really just wanted to know what happened. And I go there and they just scan me from head to toe everywhere. And I remember just staying there and letting them do their thing. And I go to the bed waiting for the doctor. And I remember I had some friends coming to visit me because they heard from another friend that I'm there. And doctor came to me and he said, listen, I've been here many, many, many years. I've never seen anything like that before. And I said, well, what are you talking about, doctor? What'd you find? And he goes, well, you didn't even break a nail. You don't even have a bruise. You don't even have any type of inflammation. Nothing. Nothing at all. Like you weren't even involved in any sort of impact. And he was really asking if that was me. And I remember showing him a scratch that I had here in my hand. And that scratch was not because of the accident itself. It's because when the firefighters used the jaws of life and they were pulling me out of the car, all the glasses were broken, of course, shattered. And my hand, they pulled me fast. So my hand hit one of the broken windows and I got a small, small little scratch. But I'm telling you, a day after, I was at work. And I remember even going to the place where the junkyard where they took my car because I wanted to get battery because I had to get another car. So I needed a brand new battery that I just bought for the car that was involved in a car accident. And I'm going there and I remember the owner come to us and he's sending us his condolences and said, well, I'm sorry about your friend. The one was here. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's me. I want my battery. And I remember he almost fainted. He was like, there's no way you came out of this. I was like, yeah. With nothing. And at the time, it was very confusing and even entertaining. But shortly after, a month after, I started encountering the visions. And note, I was so skeptical in the beginning. I was so into materialism. I would make fun of anything spiritual back in the day. I would just like be so against it. And that was because of my childhood, because I was really worried about that. I didn't even want to mess with it. So I rebelled it so much. And I was so skeptic, but I kept encountering these visions, these clairvoyant messages. And everything was just like I told you in the beginning, it's like you find out you're conceived when you have the moment of accident, your near-death experience, you're crossing to the other side, which in my case, I believe it was some, you know, you have an elevator and you have the floor between the floors, which is nothing. So I think that I was there and not fully crossed over. That's why I didn't leave the car, spiritually speaking, but I was feeling the soul experience 100%. And I just remember that I was just going through, like life was throwing me like a ragdoll from side to side, place to place, everything in my life, from relationships to jobs to people I meet. And it was all with so many challenges that's supposed to almost break a person. Only later we realize that these, what people call challenges, I call blessings. These are the real blessings when we get to trials, when we actually get to face the trial that we're here for, part of our soul journey, and overcome it, and at least surrender to it, understand it. So there was just years and months of just encountering these psychic abilities and getting messages with numbers. And it was just, it didn't scare me, but it was like, I kept making the connection to the accident and I started accepting it, but it was really, really, really tough. Because when you're truly spiritually awakening after something like that, it equals to, you get to the stage of the birth, the delivery itself, the contractions, the pain, the screaming. You know, you're like hatching from an egg. You just, and every awakening, if you were even in nature, animals, people, when we hatch, when we just being born, it's a slow awakening. It's something very, very intense. And that's what happened. And since then, there were 7 years that in the end of the seventh year, I was able to unite with my twin flame after having even false twin flames. Because I didn't even know what to say, twin flame for the sake of it, because I felt it was coming until I met my twin flame, which was the missing puzzle in my life to complete the spiritual awakening. It's not necessarily getting rid of your ego, but it's learning to live with it and balancing it so you always have your soul over the ego and not the other way around. And because of that, the consciousness, the knowledge is still being inherited to me or given to me daily, and through the fact that I help people every day and I learn to live a life for the spirit and life of a soul and like a soul. And it was something that I'm only thankful. You know, back then, I thought that my near-death experience was something that it was just like a bad thing or a warning. People used to tell me like, oh, it's a warning, it's this, it's that, it's punishment. But no, I mean, that's what needed to happen. I was supposed to, and a lot of people ask me, you know, do you have to have an NDE to wake up? Absolutely not. You can wake up just in a blink of an eye from somebody smiling at you, from you having a child, falling in love, connecting, tapping into your soul. So, yeah, and that's my story. And since then, I've been, for the past 2 years, just daily helping people from all over the world. And using the near-death experiences, this is just, you know, it's a story. It's fascinating. People relate to that. But to me, my story really starts 7 years after. That's the rebirth of my soul. And a lot of people ask me why I didn't have the classical near-death experience, which, you know, you see the tunnel and the light and you see your body floating around. Is because, you know, some call it walking soul. You know, every new age terms have different terms for many things, but it's the same phenomenon. I was able to not exchange my soul, but connect to my higher self and just download that version of me, the one that's supposed to live its purpose here. And usually when that happens, you skip dying and reincarnating here as a baby and doing the whole thing all over again. So it's just it's a walking experience. You connect to a higher version of yourself and you soul swap. Soul swap is not with a different random stranger soul. It's either with a spirit guide angel or with your higher self, with who you are in other realms. Because I believe and know that at the same time that we're living in this consciousness, in this life, we do obey the rules of time. We have a past, present, future. But as a soul, we don't have time. The soul is now bounded to the limitations of time or space or capacity. So we are everywhere. So past life is not really past life. It's the same life somewhere else. And same for your higher self. When you say, I want to connect to my higher self, it's not there's something above you in the ceiling. It's you in a higher realm of consciousness when you don't have any questions. You only have answers. So this is what happened to me. Since then, I help people who really need help from all over the world, from people who bury their children, which is the most difficult things, the hardest spiritual, mental pain a human can experience, to people who just need direction in life. And most of these people are meant to meet me as part of their soul journey and mine. So I don't just meet anyone. It's just a certain amount of souls that, and that's why I'm called a soul guide. I don't really do much for them, but just being a road sign, a traffic sign. They meet me and they're kind of like, okay, well, you're in the right path. Take a right, take a left. It's up to you, but take a step. So that sums it up. That's what I do since my story. And that's pretty much my story.